time, Tom. Buell did as he did last night, but he didn't spend as much time on it, talking about what he considers to be the right name for God. And I'm not going to talk about that, because that's not the subject for tonight. He's just wasting time because he agreed to affirm this proposition. The Bible teaches the Old Testament is binding as law today. It was not nailed to the cross when Messiah was executed. Whatever he says about the name, whether I agree or disagree, doesn't make any difference tonight because it's not part of the proposition. Now, I asked Tommy before the debate tonight, and he said, if the opportunity was right, Tommy would be willing to debate that sometime in the future. What I mean by opportunity, it has to do with if it's worthwhile for Tommy based upon the attendance from the other side. That's a measure of your opportunity. That's not the proposition for tonight. We're not going to waste time on that. Duell brought up Matthew 24, verse 35, where it says, my words will not pass away. But you know, as I mentioned last night, I have a feeling I'll be saying this a lot tonight. Though Duell is honest, so what I'm about to say, I'm not calling him dishonest. I'm just saying he's deceived. He doesn't really believe the application he made of that verse. He said, when Jesus said, my words will not pass away, that means all of the Old Testament is still binding. Remember, that's his proposition. The Bible teaches the Old Testament is binding, all of it. Yet Duell doesn't believe physical circumcision is binding today, which is part of the Old Testament. He doesn't believe the Levitical priesthood is binding today. He doesn't believe animal sacrifices are binding. He admitted to one or two of those things in his first speech. And so, obviously, Duell's application of those Jesus' words in Matthew 24:35 are incorrect. That's not what Jesus meant when he said, my words will not pass away. He doesn't mean that the old law will still be binding. If it meant that, that would mean the command to build an ark out of gopher would still be binding today. He means, you know what he means by it? He means that his words will not pass away. Not to change it to mean all of the Old Testament is still binding. And see, and we can know that. We can know it by Duell's own beliefs, because Duell's application of this verse would mean that circumcision, physical circumcision, is still binding the Levitical priesthood and animal sacrifice. And so we know that Duell doesn't really even believe his own argument. Though I'm not calling him dishonest, I'm just saying that he's self-deceived. And then he said that Jesus kept the Sabbath. He went out there in the back of that minivan. There's my pointers out there. He said that Jesus kept the Sabbath. And we're to follow Jesus. Therefore, that proves we have to keep the Sabbath. Again, Duell doesn't really believe that argument because Jesus was circumcised. Yet Duell doesn't think we have to be circumcised. Jesus taught people to do animal sacrifices when it was appropriate. Yet Duell doesn't teach that. Do you see the point? Jesus, as a matter of fact, in Matthew 23 and Matthew 5, he taught others to keep all the law of Moses, and Duell doesn't believe that. So his application is that, here's the way his argument is. We're supposed to imitate Jesus. That means we have to do everything he does, and he kept the Sabbath, therefore we have to keep the Sabbath. But let's follow that argument. We're to follow Jesus. That means we have to do everything he does. He was circumcised, and he called people to do animal sacrifices. Therefore, we have to be circumcised. I mean, for religious reasons, not health reasons. And we have to teach people to do animal sacrifices. That, the true application of his argument. His argument is unsound, is what it is. It's unsound. Now, the fact is that Duell knows, because at one time he was taught the truth, Duell knows about Hebrews 9, 15 through 17. Now, he'll want to shy away from it, but he knows about that passage, and he knows, based on that passage, his argument is completely false. Hebrews 9, beginning of verse 15, says, for this cause he, talking about Jesus, is the mediator of the New Testament, that by means of death and the redemption of the transgressions that were under the First Testament, they which are called might receive the promise of eternal inheritance. For where a testament ended, there must also be the death of the testator. Verse 17, For a testament is a force after men are dead. Otherwise, it is of no strength at all while the testator lives. I mentioned last night my mother passed away on November 27th. My daddy passed away in 2001. They had a will. Us four boys were to inherit all of their possessions. That will's been written out at least since 1976 by my dad. Even though I've been in the will since 76, I had no right to take any of those possessions until the death of my mother a few months ago. We understand that. That's probably the analogy here. At least it is analogous. That's what Jesus is saying here. That's what the writer of Hebrews is saying. Jesus is the mediator. He's the testator of the New Testament. The New Testament law doesn't come into effect until after the death of the testator, which is Jesus. Now what that means, relative to what we're talking about, Duell's argument is that when Jesus lived, he lived under the Old Testament law. Yes, he kept the Sabbath. That's because he lived under the Old Testament law. That's why he had to do circumcision and animal sacrifices and all that. Of course, he never had to do an animal sacrifice for his own sin. He had none. But he taught others to do that. You see that? So they had to live under the old law because it didn't go away, as I explained last night, until he nailed it to the cross, Colossians 2. Now, are we to imitate Christ? Yes, in many things, but not in circumcision, not in doing animal sacrifices, not in the Sabbath. You see, not in observing or respecting Levitical priesthood. Not in those things. Here's a good example of how we're to imitate Christ. We imitate Christ as he shows us how to keep the New Testament law, like in his water baptism. That is in particular why he was baptized in water. He didn't need his sins forgiven. He did it to show us as an example for us. And then, everybody turn to Genesis chapter 26, verse 5. This is the next argument that Buell made. I want to show you how Buell's argument, though he's a very nice man and very friendly, Buell's making another unsound argument. His argument in Genesis 26, 5 is that because that Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws. Now from that, I think it's a pretty big leap, but from that he's saying, see, we have to do what Abraham did. We have to keep his statutes and his laws. That's really what his argument was when you boil it down to brass tacks. Look at what Abraham did. He kept those laws. So we've got to keep those laws. Well, you'll remember from last night, we brought up Genesis 17. This is right before this. About 8 or 9 chapters. It says, this is my covenant, which ye shall keep. This is God to Abraham. Every man-child among you shall be circumcised. And this is not spiritual circumcision. It says, in your generations, which meant it was to continue on, as we saw from last night's chart, to the end of the Jewish dispensation, generations. The uncircumcised man-child, whose flesh of his foreskin is not circumcised, that soul shall be cut off from his people and broken his covenant. Now, Buell's application of Genesis 26:5, we have to obey these laws, the ones that Abraham did, that would mean that we have to do circumcision. Yet, Buell's already admitted we don't have to do circumcision. So, by his own admission, his argument will not work. It's totally unsound. Totally unsound. And then everybody turn to Psalms chapter 119, verse 6. Psalms 119, verse 6. I say this with all due respect, Buell. I would be a little more careful with your arguments. A little more careful. Try to make an argument that is sound, that will hold up. Now, Psalms 119, 160, and he quoted a number of passages in Psalms, and most of them made this same point. I couldn't write them all down. I can't write very fast. It says, thy word is true from the beginning, and every one of thy righteous judgments endureth forever. Now, what he said about that is, because every one of God's righteous judgments endures forever, he said that proves that we have to keep God's Old Testament law today. I wonder if that command for Noah to build an ark out of gopher wood, was that a righteous judgment of God? It was, wasn't it? You remember last night we brought up this fact, that animal sacrifices, 2 Chronicles 2 verse 4, were an ordinance, and there's your word, Jewel, forever, Olam. And then Exodus 40:15, the Levitical priesthood, it says it's an everlasting priesthood. Now, according to Buell, since the word forever here is in Psalms 119, 160, all of the Old Testament, every one of those commandments, in particular the Sabbath, is still binding today. Now, if that's a sound argument, that would prove that animal sacrifices and the priesthood, and circumcision, by the way, are also still binding today because they're God's righteous judgments too, aren't they? Aren't they, Jill? Aren't those God's righteous judgments when he told people to be circumcised or do respect to the Levitical priesthood or do animal sacrifices? Again, I suggest to you that Jewell really doesn't believe his own argument. Because if he really believed his own argument, then he'd be out here contending we have to be circumcised. We have to do the Levitical priesthood. We have to do animal sacrifices because every one of God's righteous judgments endures forever. But we see this word forever many times doesn't mean all the way to the end of the world, but it just means until the end, the complete end of that dispensation. The Hebrew word translated everlasting, perpetual, forever is olam. Tommy, pronounce that for me real quick. Olam. And is used sometimes in the sense of unlimited duration, sometimes in the sense of a cycle or an age, the International Standard Bible Encyclopedia. In the Old Testament dictionary I have at home, Justinian, says the second definition belongs to a whole race or people, and it comprehends all the time until their destruction. Now, it's strange that Buell will understand that these definitions are appropriate when we're talking about animal sacrifices in the priesthood, but he doesn't understand that it's appropriate when we're talking about the Sabbath, even though the very same word is used in Exodus 31, the Sabbath is assigned forever. Yet we see from the Bible that animal sacrifices were done away at the cross, the everlasting priesthood was done away, Hebrews 7:12, the priesthood being changed, there's made a necessity of change also of the law, and the Sabbath has been done away, Colossians 2:14-17. Next, Buell turned to Romans chapter 6, verse 15. Now, Buell, if you would just listen to what you're reading, you'd have a better idea of what's going on in regard to this subject. Everybody look at Romans 6, verse 15, and notice what it said. He skipped right over something in it that was very important. Paul is speaking here and he says, what then? Shall we sin because we are not under the law, but under grace? God forbid it. You know, I don't know why you read that. I really can't figure out how that can help your position because it really proves my position. It just closes the door on you, Duel. He's saying, Paul here has been talking in Romans 6 how that we're not under the law, which Duel is saying, continuing tonight, we still are under the law. He says we're not under the law. And then Paul says, does that mean we're just free to sin anytime we want to because we're not under the law? And of course, he says no in some other passages. No, we're under the law of Christ, 1 Corinthians 9. His whole point is here that we're not under the law, but that does not give us a right to sin, Jewel. We're not under the law. Now, Jewel, isn't that what that says? It says because we're not under the law, should we go ahead and sin? Doesn't it say here because we are not under the law? Does that say we're under the law or not under the law, Jewel? You're contending tonight that we're under the law. And this verse, the one you read as an affirmative proof text, says we're not under the law. Now, what does it mean to be under the law? Well, Jesus, it says he was born under the law, meaning Jesus was born into the world, into the system, the Jewish system, where they were obligated to obey the law. As we said, Jesus lived it perfectly, the Old Testament law. That's the one he was under. He didn't pass away until he nailed it to the cross, Colossians 2. Look at Romans 3:19.
Where's that when he's under?
Okay. Hold my time, Tommy. Hold my time, Tommy. We'll get that. Galatians 4:4. Thank you. I've got it on a chart. But thank you very much. Yeah. But when the fullness of the time was come, God sent forth His Son, made of a woman, made under the law. Okay? In that verse, you can't take that out of the Bible. Start my time, Tommy. Now go to Romans 3:19. In Romans 3:19, it says, now we know that what things soever the law saith, it saith to them who are under the law. Do you see that? Whatsoever things that the law saith, it saith to them who are under the law. What is that saying? That's saying that under the law means that you're obligated to the law. In other words, the New Testament law has said to us, that means we're under the law. We're obligated to obey it. What things soever that the law saith, it saith to them who are under the law. That means you're obligated to that. And so Romans 6, verse 15, when it says that we're not under the law, that means we're not obligated to the law. We don't have to obey it anymore. Thank you for the help from the audience. And then Gil said, there had to be a law back then, in the very beginning, in Genesis, because the Bible teaches where there is no law, there is no sin. And of course, the Bible goes on to say in that same context that everybody is under sin. I believe that's in Romans chapter 5. And so that implies there was a law back then, but it wasn't the Sabbath law. What was the law that Adam and Eve were under, Billy? What law did they violate? The first sin, what did they violate? What was that law? Was it the Sabbath? What was it? It
would have been a patriarchal law.
Well, and what was, in particular, what law was it specifically? Don't eat the forbidden fruit, as we say. That was the law that they broke. Was Cain, he mentioned Cain. Cain murdered his brother. Well, was he guilty when he committed murder? Guilty? Yeah, there must have been a law. So there was a law against murder. Certainly. As Billy said, the patriarchal law. That we believe that law goes all the way back there, but not the law of Moses, and certainly not the Sabbath law. Look at my chart number 3. When was the Sabbath law first given? Well, I didn't write these verses, you know, but they're in there. Notice this. In Deuteronomy 5, verses 1 through 3 and 12, it says, Moses called all Israel and said unto them, the statutes and judgments which I speak in your ears this day, that ye may learn them and keep them and do them. The Lord our God made a covenant with us in Horeb, or at Mount Sinai. The Lord made not this covenant with our fathers. Not only were the Gentiles not obligated to keep this law, this covenant was not made with the fathers of these people, with their ancestors. It says the Lord made not this covenant with their fathers, but with us, even us, who are all here alive this day, keep the Sabbath day to keep it holy. This covenant included the Sabbath was not even made with the Jews, the Israelites, or before Moses. Notice Nehemiah 9, thou camest down upon Mount Sinai, gavest them right judgments and true laws, good statutes and commandments, and madest known unto them thy holy Sabbath, and commandest them precepts, statutes, and laws by the hand of Moses. So when God came down upon Mount Sinai, he made up known unto them thy holy Sabbath. That gives us an indication again that Mount Sinai is when the Sabbath law was first given. Ezekiel 20, 10 through 12, wherefore I caused them to go forth out of the land of Egypt, brought them into the wilderness, gave them my statutes, and showed them my judgments, which if a man knew, he shall live in them. Moreover, also I gave them my Sabbath to be a sign between me and them. Do you see that? The Sabbath wasn't given until right around the time of Mount Sinai. As a matter of fact, the first time you ever see anybody keeping the Sabbath is Exodus chapter 16. 4 minutes. Now, you'll say, well, there's been a change in the law, but it's not been taken away. Well, what do these verses mean then, Jewel? If it hadn't been taken away, what do these verses mean? It says Hebrews 8, 7, for if that first covenant had been faultless, there should no place have been sought for the second. In that respect, the new covenant hath made the first old, now that which can and waxeth old is ready to change or be modified slightly. No, it's ready to vanish away. Hebrews 10, now listen, this is important. Hebrews 10, 9, talking about Jesus, it says, he taketh away the first, I'm at the first covenant, that he may establish the second. So it's not just a slight modification. He took away the first covenant that he could establish the second covenant. Now I didn't write those. I know those verses prove beyond any shadow of a doubt, very clearly, your position is wrong, Deal, but I did not write those verses. They're straight out of the Bible. Number 17, let's talk about Colossians 2. We need to deal with this more, because this verse specifically mentions the Sabbath as something that's been done away. Notice verse 14. Blotting out the handwriting, by the way, this is talking about Jesus, the handwriting of ordinances that was against us, which was contrary to us, and took it out of the way, nailing it to his cross. Let no man therefore judge you in meat or in drink, respect of a holy day or the new moon or the Sabbath days, which are a shadow of things to come, but the body is of Christ. Now, verse 14 is telling us what was done with these ordinances, that is, God-ordained laws. He blotted them out, took them out of the way, and he nailed them to the cross. Now, what's the conclusion? Notice this word, therefore. Let no man therefore judge you. That means, I'm going to tell you the conclusion from what I've just said. Let no man therefore judge you with respect to these ordinances. No man can say you are sinning if you don't keep these laws, as these laws are not part of God's law for today. In other words, these laws have been blotted out, taken out of the way, nailed to the cross. Therefore, no man can judge you based upon these ordinances. Now, he gives us a sampling of the ordinances. He gives us the daily, the weekly, the monthly, and the yearly sampling. The ordinances he's talking about in Colossians 2 that are blotted out, taken away, and nailed to the cross are specified right in the text. The meat and the drink offerings, the holy day, that would be the 7-yearly feast, the new moon, which is the monthly, and the weekly is the Sabbath. You know, back then, under the Old Testament law, when the Sabbath was binding, you could judge someone based upon their violation of that law, in the sense it's talking about here. When a man picked up sticks on the Sabbath, he was stoned. Now, it says nobody can judge you with respect to the Sabbath, because that law has been blotted out, taken out of the way, and nailed to the cross. That passage is very, very clear. As a matter of fact, it's not ambiguous at all. There's really no way to get around it. Let me ask you this. If you're trying to serve the Lord, you remember he said, if you love me, you'll follow me. That's what Jill said. Well, if you love him and you're going to follow him, why in the world, Jill, would you struggle so hard to get around what these plain texts say? All right. Ephesians 2, 14 through 16 is also clear. And I think it's so similar to Colossians 2, I call it a parallel passage. Ephesians 2, 14 through 16, for he, talking about Jesus, is our peace, who hath made both one, hath broken down the middle wall partition between us, having abolished. That's a pretty strong word. You'll say it's been a slight modification to the law, not taken away, though. Well, this says abolished. Abolished in its flesh, that means that is death, the enemy, the enmity, even the law of commandments containing ordinances. What law was that? You know, that's, it's talking about those ordinances again, those dogmas again. It says, this law was contained in ordinances, the law of commandments. For to make himself of twain, or two, one new man, so making peace, that he might reconcile both unto God in one body by the cross, having slain the enmity thereby. The point of this is, the Jews and Gentiles were separated because only the Jews were obligated to the Old Testament law. And the Gentiles were. So as long as you had that law there, they couldn't be one people. He took that law out of the way so they could be one. Simply put, Jesus abolished the law of commandments. Could it be any clearer? He abolished the law, which includes the Sabbath. Thank you very much. I ask you to listen respectfully to my friend Buell.